We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing TSBC alumni Shayna Norwood of Steel Pedal Press, a Chicago-based letterpress studio. Shayna started Steel Pedal Press in 2008 as a side hustle, and it became her full-time gig by 2010. In 2016, she opened up her flagship retail shop in Chicago. On today's episode, Shayna shares how she manages both a wholesale business and a retail storefront, the challenges she's faced along the way of growing this business, and her advice to those that are pitching their products to retail storefronts. And Shayna, I'm really excited to have you back. I'm excited to share with our audience how you've juggled having a wholesale line as well as a retail shop and all that goes through with both of those. So thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So let's start at the beginning. How did Steel Pedal Press get its start?
I started when I was still in college. It was a part-time thing I was doing. I just was decided to print a line of greeting cards to send to friends and family. I just moved to Chicago, started going to grad school, had letterpress equipment available, printed some cards, had some left over, and contacted a consignment shop in my neighborhood. They started selling my cards and were like, you should put more in. They sold out. And I didn't have time really because I was still in grad school.
Right.
At that point, I did it part-time for a few years. That was kind of the start of it. And then at some point I was like, I need to figure out something. I'll try buying a press, seeing what I can do, starting an Etsy shop. Yeah, it was a slow process. I did it part-time for probably 2 or 3 years before I went into doing it full-time.
Was 2008 when you kind of made that jump to making it more of a regular business?
That was when I first started printing cards and started selling them. But gotcha. I mean, I barely sold anything the first year and was just trying to like figure out like printing my style, right. If it was something I even wanted to do. Yeah, there was like a gradual kind of buildup too. Like I hardly sold anything. I started selling more. I started going to craft fairs. I had other part-time jobs. I was planning a wedding.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, 2010, I got laid off my part-time job was what happened. Like it was right after the economy started to go down. So I got laid off and then was doing unemployment and had extra time. So I was like, well, I'll put more energy into this and see where it goes.
I love that you started doing this as like an extracurricular while you were in grad school, like as a way to blow off the steam and just, you know, because you were in grad school for art, right?
Yeah, book and paper art. And it was book and paper art includes like paper making, letterpress printing, book binding, all of those skills. And it was something I'd also done in my undergraduate degree.
Very nice.
But for me, it was also just about communicating because I had just moved to Chicago from California and I wanted to, you know, be in touch with friends. Was the greeting card part about it instead of just the printmaking part. And so for me, it was about communication and keeping in touch with people and doing something more than just, you know, calls or Facebook or whatever.
Right. I love that. And it's an extension of your personal goals. So it was slow growth at the beginning, which is common for a lot of us. And then how did you decide that you wanted to start wholesaling?
I got an article written about me in Daily Candy, which is no longer exists.
I love
but
Daily
it was
Candy.
Pretty big.
It was
pretty
a big deal
at the time. Yeah. And so I had Chicago stores contact me through that article being like, do you sell wholesale? And so I was like, I guess so.
Take it till you make it.
Yeah. And then I was just still approaching some stores in Chicago being like, I'm local. I do this. Here's my Etsy shop if you want to buy some cards. And a lot of Chicago people are, and Chicago shops are very into supporting local people. Right. And we're lucky because it's a pretty big city and there's a lot of kind of small boutique-y shops here. So I maybe had, I want to say like 4 or 5 shops in Chicago first. And that was like my beginning of it. But I feel like that wasn't like the dead serious. I didn't have a catalog. I wasn't reaching out to people really. I was just like a part-time thing.
And it was more, it sounds like, them coming to you versus you doing the outreach.
I did a little bit of outreach. I tried like going store to store. I tried doing like some cold calling. A lot of it was not successful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough way to go.
Yeah.
And then you did the National Stationery Show. When was your first year doing that?
2013.
Okay.
So it took like 2 or 3 years to get to that point. And I'm glad I took the time as well, because the first few years I was still kind of like figuring out my style. Yeah, I think I'm still kind of evolving that way, but totally. Like getting together what would be competitive in that type of arena. Whereas when you're just in Chicago doing something locally, it's different. When you're at the National Stationery Show, it's, you know, everybody is there. So it's, you really need to stand out in certain ways. And I think before that, I just didn't feel confident or ready enough to that, or that I had like a strong enough individual voice that it would stand out at the show.
Yeah. Did you do Ladies Letterpress for your first year out?
That was my first year. Yeah.
How did you like that experience?
I really liked it. I mostly did it for financial reasons. I thought it was a great way to start out. I was really overwhelmed with all of the choices that you had to make, and they kind of took care of a lot of those things for you.
That's nice.
Yeah. And that was part of the reason I did it. And then also financial reasons. And I liked it for starting, but it was after the first time I was like, I need to go do my own thing after this or get my own booth.
Yeah.
Cause there was a little bit of, you just can't express your own personal style in a group booth.
Right.
Or it gets confusing.
It does get confusing, and it's a smaller footprint. I don't think they're actually doing a booth this year, the shared booth, but I know it's been a really great segue for a lot of our alumni who want to test the waters and see if the show's right for them to have that option.
Yeah, and I also know people who afterwards decided not to do it. Like, yeah. So it wasn't for them. So it's totally. It's a lower stress, lower impact way of kind of getting started.
Totally. I say that about paper camp all the time. I want people to come to camp, hear what we have to say about wholesale, and hear what we have to say about shows, because I'd rather you spend 2 days with us than spend, you know, a year and thousands of dollars planning for a show only to find out it's not what you want to be doing. But so explain how you decided to open the retail shop and the retail side of things.
That was kind of by accident. It wasn't something I necessarily wanted to do from the beginning, but I needed a bigger retail shop. I knew that, or not retail shop, a bigger print shop. Mm-hmm. So, and I was looking for places closer to my house. Where my print shop had been was like 7 or 8 miles away. It was just, the commute was killing me. And I had 500 square feet. I wanted to be closer to home. And there weren't a lot of kind of situations that, like the one I had been in, close to home or within walking distance, or if they were, they were like in my neighborhood, but kind of in the, you know, sketchier side of the neighborhood, and just not necessarily places that you would want to bring wedding clients who are going to, you know, be spending thousands of dollars. And so there, I found a storefront. Oh, another thing I wanted to be was a storefront so that I could be more connected with the community.
Because nice. That's part of
just something that, you know, I feel like is fulfilling when you're contributing to your community. And so I was looking for storefronts. I was looking for something in like a nicer neighborhood or closer to home, just to be, you know, on brand with what I feel like, you know, reflects my style and what I do.
Yeah.
And so I found a spot that was really close to home, really great location, but like way more money than I had been spending, like maybe 4 times the amount I had been spending.
Wow.
And I basically figured that the way that I could pay for it would be by also opening a retail shop to cover a part of the rent. And then once I started thinking about that, I was like, got really excited about like curating the shop and like bringing in brands I believe in, and also supporting the stationery community, which is not just Chicago, but, you know, all over the country.
Right.
And people that I know, to me, I got really excited about that. So that enthusiasm kind of, once I started thinking about it, drove me to make the decision, even though I felt like it was pretty risky.
Yeah.
For like the rent wise.
Yeah. It's a big financial investment, but it sounds like it's paid off well for you.
Yeah. It's done really well. I mean, I couldn't even sign the lease on my own. Like my parents and my husband had to co-sign the lease for me. They were like, we like you, but we want to make sure you can pay the rent. But yeah, no, it's turned out really well. It's been successful so far.
That's fantastic. So tell us what kind of stuff you stock in your store.
So I could call it like a stationery and gift shop. I kind of modeled it a little bit after the way Paper Source does things, but without like the bulk supplies. Mm-hmm. So lots of cards, card walls, about a third of the cards are ours, and then cards from other independent designers around the country, and then just kind of small gift items. I try to keep everything under $50. I've lived in this neighborhood for 10 years, so I know it pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, I curated it basically by section. So we have like, you know, booze and wine section and a coffee mug section and a cat and dog section and a DIY section and like soaps and candles.
Fun.
And then we have rotating seasonal sections. So that's kind of the framework of the items that I get. And then I've learned that like my brand is, and also my type of customers are like things that are humorous, curse words sell a lot, but also things that are like pretty and beautiful, or smell good or are funny. So yeah.
That's awesome. Especially having lived in the neighborhood, you do have a really good sense of who your audience is there and who's walking the street looking to, you know, find stuff from you.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. So let's talk about managing both the wholesale side of your business and having a retail shop. How do you split your time? How much time do you spend, if you had a like pie chart, so to speak, like how much of your time is spent on wholesale versus retail?
That's hard to say. The mornings in the shop are, there's only, I'd say I'm only in the shop by myself, like, or whatever, like maybe 5 or 10 hours a week. And then otherwise I have other people in the shop so I can do other things.
Yep.
But I'm always kind of helping straighten or placing retail orders. And then the other part of it is more just the production side of things, because I have my own presses and I print. The wholesale part is complicated because we'll do like big outreaches or newsletters, but I have, you know, people that help me do that. Yeah. So I'll kind of like give direction, and then someone will, you know, write all the handwritten notes and put all the catalogs in. Right now, it's been difficult trying to get new designs out for May. That's yeah. been the struggle currently.
Because you're still doing the designing, right? You've hired other yeah. people to do other projects.
Yeah, yeah. My main job is, yeah, designing and printing. So, yeah. So it's hard to say because, like, right. I'll just kind of work with things as
every
they come up.
Every day's different, right?
Yeah. And then they're... It's like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 10 minutes there.
Yeah, it's hard. I know. I feel like I'm pulled in. I don't even have that many arms in my business. But you mentioned you have people helping you. Can we talk about that a little bit? Like yeah. on the wholesale side of your business, who do you have staff there and what are their roles? And then on the retail side, what are their roles and who's staffed?
Yeah, so I just hired a fourth person, but I have, I guess now, four people that work for me. One is mostly just retail person, but then she'll also work a lot on post-production of cards. So like if it's low in the retail shop, she'll spend time, you know, folding and sleeving and enveloping right. and all that. But her main job is to check in all the items that come in for the retail shop, put them into our point of sale system, and then be like walking around helping customers and checking people out. But she's there part-time. And then I have a fulfillment guy and he does all of the shipping, all the outgoing shipping, because we also have retail online sales like through Etsy
right.
and my shop. And then he'll ship out the wholesale orders and help with other shipping stuff. And then I have a studio manager who kind of does more of the higher level, like research stuff and employee manuals and, you know, streamlining things. We're doing like customer service training with her. And then the fourth person that I just hired only works 2 days a week. And she is kind of the extra person to come in and like, if someone gets sick or is out for a month or whatever, then she can be on call to help. So we're not kind of stretched thin.
Gotcha. So she's a little bit like a floater that fills in.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly.
Nice. It's good to have that help too.
Yeah.
What's the most difficult thing about having a wholesale business in a retail storefront?
It, like if I'm here by myself, you can get really distracted by customers that come in. Mm-hmm. So I definitely need like time to like either be at home or close the doors and like find time to work on designs, because that's really what I feel like drives my business. Even though I do have the retail store, it's just a part of it.
Right.
Also, right now, I'm trying to figure out how to phase out. I also do wedding invitations, which I feel like is distracting from the wholesale part too. Mm-hmm. But every time I get a new wedding client, I'm like, oh, now I have to work with the wedding client, which is just, there's more deadlines and I don't know. So
it's just another layer of things to handle.
Yeah. Yeah. So I basically just figuring out how to divide up your time. The retail store, because it's right in front of your face, can be more like immediately demanding. Mm-hmm. Whereas like wholesale, I have to be really intentional about setting aside time to work on that.
Right. Well, and wholesale too is more timely in the sense that you also have release schedules and there's certain times a year that buyers are buying. And so you do have to be a bit more intentional, whereas the retail stuff, you don't know when somebody's going to walk through your door.
Yeah, or you just go, and you also just, I see it all the time, so I'm like, this needs to be straightened. I'm going to rearrange this. Like, yeah, it's just, you see it all the time. You can just do it while you're passing through. So
That's funny. It kind of reminds me of working from home. So I have an office in our converted garage, but I don't have a restroom out here or like a kitchen sink or any of that. So when I go through the house, I constantly see like the kids' toys there or this and that. And it's like, I go clean it up and then I'm like, wait, no, I need to go back to work. It's kind of the same thing, even though it's different types of responsibilities, but it's easy. It is. It's easy to get distracted in our own work environment, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your team and their roles. Can you tell us about a time where you were in transition in your business and how that felt and kind of what you did to segue out of it?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I've done recently has been opening up the retail store, which included a lot of different components, you know, hiring people, figuring out what I was going to buy, figuring out a shop layout, moving gigantic presses, doing outreach, hiring people. Did I already say that? And then when I hired more people, before I just had been me and a studio manager, and then we hired two new people as like, you know, more part-timers. And then, so that was like getting a employee manual together and working on core values and like really thinking through some like higher level stuff, which before I'd kind of been more reactionary to things in my business. More intentionally like laying out where the presses would be, where the, you know, warehouse storage would be. Whereas in my old space, I kind of just put some stuff in and it grew around that and it wasn't necessarily the best laid out. So.
Well, it sounds like too, when you went to the retail shop, not only were you bringing in a totally different business model or a revenue stream into your business rather, but you were also then you were moving yourself into more of a managerial position and because you now have these other people doing some of the day-to-day work, which, you know, it's a good position to be in, but it is a transition. It is a shift when you're scaling like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing for me was just the hardest thing that was like most physically taxing was the actual move into the new space. Like there was the prep for it, but I had time for that. And then there was, you know, setting up the tables, setting up the new shelving we needed. It was just like a lot of days of kind of physical labor too, and not a lot of sleeping.
Was merchandising fun for you, or was it something that you've, you know, had a tough time with? Or
It was a learning process, but I kind of have learned to trust my instinct. And to me, it's like the way that I think about merchandising is if it's something I could picture myself buying for a friend, then it's something I'll buy for the store. If I don't know in what situation I would buy it or sell it, then I usually pass on it. Yeah. So it's kind of been a little bit instinctual. And then also, like I said earlier, having the kind of categories helped keep it focused, curated. So if I'm like, does it fit in the dog and cat section? Does it fit into the like booze and alcohol section? Yeah. Where will this fit? That's kind of been helpful, which is something I thought about before I opened. But I mean, it took a while to. I think we moved in April and we didn't open until June. Mm-hmm. So there's also like figuring out the POS system and getting everything in there and Yeah. So
I think it's interesting because we have a lot of people in our alumni community that talk about doing what you did of, you know, finding a space that could serve as a retail storefront while also being a studio space, you know, in the back or whatever to supplement. But I think there's also that whole you don't know what you don't know till you get into it. And setting up a retail shop sounds so easy, but I'm sure there's a lot more logistics that people aren't thinking about. Was there anything in particular that surprised you in the process of setting up that retail side?
I talked to a lot of people before I even went down this road because of the risk involved with the extra rent. Mm-hmm. I think because I talked to so many people, I was kind of ready for a lot of different things. That was super helpful. One of the things that I talked to someone about, I was like, how do I know I can afford the space? And they're like, well, like, figure out all of your expenses, like your rent. I have to pay taxes on the space, the employees, everything. Figure out what you need to sell, like divide whatever your monthly expenses are by however many days you're going to be open, and figure out if that's something that you think is reasonable. And then I talked to other stores in the neighborhood and was like, is this a reasonable amount that I could spend? So like doing all of that math was, I think, I'm glad I did the work, but I was like, I could just do it, because everything before that for me had been pretty like intuitive, or like it hadn't been such a big step. So yeah, doing the math was, I wouldn't say a surprise, but it was definitely a new thing that I had to think about in terms of numbers. And
yeah, I love that strategy of, I mean, that makes perfect sense to add it all up, divide by the number of days open, and see, okay, well, can I realistically bring in this amount of sales per day?
Yeah.
I assume was the number higher than you were expecting when you ran the numbers?
No, it was okay because I have the wholesale business too. Yep. And what that supports. So it was pretty low, mm-hmm. but I'm also in an area that's more local. It's not really like a shopping area. Uh-huh. And there's mostly bars up and down the street. So people don't like come here to shop. They come here to like drink at night.
Gotcha.
So, and it's pretty slow here during the day, which is also good because then we can work on getting other stuff done.
Right.
So I think it would be really hard for me to just open the shop if I also didn't have the production space mm-hmm. in the same area. I would be much harder paying rent. But because they're both combined, then we can kind of do double duty. Like the retail person can fold cards until someone walks in the door.
It's interesting to hear you talk about this because it feels like a higher level version of what most people start out as. For example, like they'll be selling online in their Etsy shop and they'll want to dabble in wholesale and and maybe they're doing some custom work and they're offsetting different costs or their time based upon all three, you know, revenue streams. But this is just, you know, it's bigger because there's bigger expenses tied to it and bigger risk, but it sounds like it's worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah. And I also, well, because I know the neighborhood, there really aren't like the closest other kind of like gifty shop like this is like a half a mile away, which in Chicago is kind of, it's like the next train stop down. Mm-hmm. So, but Logan Square is pretty, where I am in Chicago is pretty big and also blowing up, like they're building condos everywhere. Awesome. So I knew that there was a need for it in the neighborhood. I mean, I wouldn't say we're like a destination place, but yeah, just also knowing that like it's like filling a hole that isn't already there. There's not like another gift shop right next door.
So Shana, do you have any advice for people that are reaching out to retail storefronts and, you know, basically manufacturers that want to reach out to buyers? What recommendations do you have for them?
For me, I mean, I can tell you what I want. I'm not sure how other people feel about the things, but I do not like someone who just walks into the store to try and sell me stuff. That's the worst. I'm busy. I'm doing other things. I have other stuff going on. I don't even personally like meeting with sales reps like in the stores. I just, because there's so many other parts to what I'm doing, I might feel like I'm always busy. So for me, that is something I would not recommend. I also do not like cold calls, for the same reasons. I feel like it interrupts my workflow when I'm in the middle of doing something. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate getting mailers or catalogs in the mail. And I also don't mind getting, just an email with a little bit about their shop and what they're into and like maybe some links to items. some people will come in and be like, will you sell this here? I'm like, oh, what's your opening order? What's your minimum? So what's this and that? And they have no answers.
Right.
That's, I mean,
you it's need a huge to red know. Flag that they don't know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. So, and I've had a few, even if there weren't necessarily people that I wanted to bring in right away. Like, I just got an email that was directly to me. It wasn't a mass email. It was like, they'd done research on my shop. They pointed me directly to items they thought would fit in my shop. You know, something about donuts and something about coffee and I don't know, things that I like that we carry in our shop. So having done some research and then not only done the research, but pointed me to specific items that would fit is super helpful. And also shows me that they're, you know, professional and that they care.
We talked this weekend at Paper Camp about identifying the right retailers versus just, you know, I gave my normal talk about, I'd rather you have a small list of 50 stores that are the right fit for you than a list of thousands of stores that you may or may not be the right fit for. And a lot of them asked, well, how do I know that they're the right fit, especially if they're not located close to me where I can just walk in and see? And I made a few recommendations about looking online or checking out, you know, social media feeds. What else can you recommend people do to get a better sense of your store and maybe the categories that you sell?
I think probably for me, because I spend a lot of time on social media, especially Instagram would maybe be the best fit. I have a lot of photos on my website too of some of the products we carry. So yeah.
What about your website? Does your website have the dog in this? Like, does it have the category breakdowns that you kind of have? In your
No.
Okay.
But there are some photos of the interior of the retail shop and then the presses and everything. We don't sell other products online. So I don't know how she knew that I liked donuts, but.
Because who doesn't like donuts? Let's be real, right? That's awesome. What about follow-up as a buyer? You know, how much follow-up is too much follow-up?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you send out something, I never like phone calls. I like just ever. If someone's like, oh, did you get my catalog? You could do that over email. So It's fine to like send a catalog, send a follow-up over email. I usually know right away if I want this item in the store or not. And it has mostly to do with the products and less to do with any note you send or how you send it or anything else. I can usually tell what I want in the store, what I don't. A lot of the buying process depends on what room we have, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just placed 6 card orders and there's no more room on the shelves, I'm not going to place another card order. So I mean, maybe I don't mind getting follow-ups, you know, every like 3 to 6 months because the inventory will have overturned at that point. Maybe I do need to place a card order.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully by then they also have new product to offer you too.
Yeah. Or maybe I just, you know, I was like, oh, I like this, but then I forgot about it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh, and then also I would say things that have motivated me to buy stuff is like, we have a special right now. Free shipping is good, or percentage off. I mean, even if I don't need something, I might take advantage of that just to get the discount on it.
Yeah.
Because margins are important. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's super helpful. So what would you say to somebody that's thinking about doing what you're doing and they want to open a retail shop and also have other avenues of their business like wholesale or online retail? What kind of advice would you give them?
Make sure it's something you want to do because it's a lot of work. Yeah. Do your research. Like I said before, like the numbers thing was super important. Be as prepared as possible for like any scenario before you go into it. That was really helpful for me. We opened like a month later than we wanted to because we were like getting everything in the PO system, making sure everyone was trained, you know, making sure everything was set up, slowly making orders to fill the space instead of just like ordering a whole bunch of stuff all at once. And to me, it felt like a super smooth transition, and to everybody too. Like it went like better than I thought it would.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And then also I have my studio manager who works for me has done a ton of retail stuff, like more than I have, and had a really strong sense of how to set things up, how to do like a lot of back-end management stuff. And having someone who's like super, you know, reliable and good at what they do that can help you with things is also really helpful.
Oh yeah, it's invaluable. I always joke that when I'm hiring somebody, they have to be smarter than me and they need to be able to teach me things that, you know, are in their area of expertise, because none of us know everything, right?
So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like hiring people that know more than me in certain areas. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. Is there anything else you want to leave everybody with before we go?
I don't know. I guess it can be a lot of hard work, but can also be like super fulfilling, whatever you choose to do. If it's, you know, something you feel like it has purpose in your life and can be enjoyable, then it's worth it. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's been really great. It's been a really great experience. And even the hard times that are tough, I appreciate all of them. So yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you again for sharing your story. I love having alums on this podcast to talk about how business is not just a straight and narrow path. You know, we all zig and zag and have to make tough decisions along the way. And so it's just fun to hear about the different choices we all make and how we choose things that reflect our values as a person and as a business and everything. So I love what you've had to say today. Where can people find you?
So I have a website, steelpedalpress.com. I also have my brick and mortar store, which is Steel Pedal Press in Logan Square in Chicago. And then Facebook, Steel Pedal Press, and Instagram is where I do most of my social media stuff, at Steel Pedal Press.
Awesome. So. Well, we'll definitely include that in the show notes too. Thanks again for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Hey friends, if you're thinking about wholesale and or trade shows in the near future, I highly recommend you check out our Paper Camp program. The next one's going to be in September, and it's 2 amazing but intense days where we talk about how to ensure your product line is ready for wholesale, how to reach retail buyers, which sales tools you need to have, and really how to create them, plus all the nitty-gritty details that you need to know before you do a large wholesale show. We have a fantastic group of speakers joining us. They'll sit side by side with you during the program, and we even have time reserved for one-on-one sessions. Sarah from Constellation & Co. said that Paper Camp was pivotal for her business and the best money she's ever spent investing in herself and her business. When Lisa from Tiramisu Papery came to camp, she was already working with a handful of wholesale accounts. And after camp, she went home and put in the hard work and is now selling to over 120 stores and working with 2 sales reps. If you want to make transitions in your business or refine your current wholesale program, head over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp to register. And just so you know, seats are limited. We like to keep things small so that you get personal attention, and we also want to make sure that all of your questions are answered. So more information is available at tradeshowcamp.com, then click on Paper Camp, and we hope you'll join us. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.